Do you really think all this is an accident? You think we crashed on this place by coincidence? Especially this place? We were brought here for a purpose, for a reason, all of us. Each one of us was brought here for a reason.
Brought here. And who brought us here, John?
The island.
Look, if you want to push the button, you do it yourself.
If it's not real, then what are you doing here, Jack? Why did you come back? Why do you find it so hard to believe?
Why do you find it so easy?
It's never been easy!
It's a leap of faith, Jack.
Two players, two sides. One is light, one is dark.
I see you in another life, brother. We have to go back!
We're gonna need to watch that again.
Hello and welcome to The Storm, a Lost Rewatch podcast. This episode is for season 2, episode 16, The Whole Truth. And because of Kate's question about who flies with the pregnancy test, what's the weirdest thing you've flown with? My name is Dave Gonzalez, and sometimes I fly with pot candy, which I hide amongst gas and diarrhea pills. So like 2 months worth of diarrhea pills.
My name's Joanna Robinson, and the weirdest thing that I've ever flown with was a whole large barbecue brisket from Terry Black's in Austin that I brought home to my roommate Diana one time. TSA had to open it up and probe it and everything because they didn't know why someone would fly.
They probed your brisket?
Brisket. That being said, if you've never had the brisket from Terry Black's, or if you've ever had the brisket from Terry Black's, you know why I took it on a plane. The end.
And I'm Neil Miller, and the weirdest thing I've ever flown with, folks who have come to Con of Thrones to see us and other luminaries will note that I sometimes have a George R. R. Martin doll with me that speaks phrases that George R. R. Martin might say in his real life, or did say at one point for this doll. And it's definitely the weirdest thing. Dave was actually there when the San Francisco TSA agent pulled it out of my suitcase on my way home from our live show at the end of Game of Thrones season 8. And I had to explain to him what it was, and then he had to take the batteries out of George's butt.
So that swap was, those batteries.
Had to make sure those batteries were cool. So yeah.
We're here to talk about Lost. We are in season 2 of Lost, but this could be your first time joining us. The ABC series Lost lasted for 6 seasons. We're working our way through episode by episode, which means it's a rewatch for us who have seen all of Lost, but it could be your first time through, in which case, welcome. We divide this podcast into 2 halves, one for you newcomers called The Calm, or just people who are rewatching and want to generally talk about the episode. The Calm's for everyone, is what I want to say. And it's about things that have only happened up to season 2, episode 16, The Whole Truth, this week's episode. If you have seen the rest of Lost or don't care about spoilers to questions that have burning questions that you have from this episode and beyond, the second part of our podcast is called The Storm. It's where we keep all the spoilers. If you look down at your podcast device, there should be time codes as to where that starts so that you do not get needlessly spoiled here on this island of mystery. We call our second half The Storm of Spoilers because it's a play off The Storm of Swords, which is a George R. R. Martin book, which, as Neil was discussing, we used to do Game of Thrones things. So you could head to patreon.com/stormofspoilers, our little corner of patreon.com, and become a patron of this show. If you could subscribe at the $5 level, you get some extra bonus podcasts. If you just subscribe at the $10 level, you get even more extra bonus podcasts. All the details are at patreon.com/stormofspoilers. While you're looking down at your device to make sure you don't get spoiled, check the date. If it is after March 18th, you are no longer able to subscribe at the $1 level at patreon.com/stormofspoilers. We're sorry, but we are amping up the participation levels there, for internal purposes that you'll all understand when you join us over at patreon.com/stormofspoilers. But that's enough from me. Let's head over to Joanna with some contributions from you in the form of emails and reviews.
So last week I said we had no emails. And this week we have an embarrassment of riches. People emailed host@stormpodcast.com. We're going to read a bunch of those belong in the storm section and the spoiler section. Cause those of you who are emailing in want to talk about the future. And I completely understand that. So we're going to get to a lot of those emails in the storm section. I would love to get more storm emails from you guys because that's a feedback we get a lot is that people want more discussion in the spoiler section of the podcast. So, we'd love to have prompts from you guys on that. But first I'm going to read a couple non-spoiler emails, before we get to those other ones later on. This first one is a really important one from Emily and it's titled Mystery Fourth Host ?
What?
Dearest Storm Hosts. I have many questions and comments relating to my second all-time favorite show, Lost, tied with Buffy and falling only after my beloved Veronica Mars. Joanna, anytime you and Kristen want to take on Veronica Mars, I am there for it, which I will send in another email eventually. In the meantime, would you please introduce your fourth host, who I constantly hear shaking her collar in the background. Age, sex, breed, story of origin. As an avid dog lover, I need to know all the details. Thanks in advance and keep up the amazing work, Emily. So this lets me know that Emily is a relatively new listener and is not familiar with our fourth co-host, who we definitely talked about probably more in the Game of Thrones era of the podcast. Neil, would you like to introduce listeners to our fourth co-host?
Oh, wow. That really took a turn. First, I thought that this was going to be an email about how we should get another host. And I was like, no. We already have three. But yeah, I guess Nico, she counts. She's always around. She's a schnauzer. How old is Nico? She's 11. Holy shit. Which in dog years, I think, what are dog years? 7?
77.
Oh no, she's in the target zone for coronavirus.
Yeah.
We're not going to let her go outside anymore.
She's a Biden voter and for coronavirus.
I don't know if I can agree with the Biden thing. She's she's very woke. She's great. She lives here and is the boss of the household. So it is by Nico's grace that we are able to record this podcast ever. So there you go.
All right. And then the second email that I'm going to read in this non-spoiler section is from Matthew, and this is in response to, something we discussed, in a previous episode about Mr. Echo and his beard. And Matthew writes in, last week you talked about possible symbolisms behind Mr. Echo cutting off his beard. Joanna found a possible link to ideas from Hinduism, but it occurred to me that given Echo's background, we should try looking into stories from the Bible. The most famous biblical haircutting story is that of Samson, who lost his strength when his hair is cut off. So perhaps that means that Echo cutting his beard off is a conscious renunciation of violence, a statement that he doesn't need his strength anymore, and he's going to walk as a man of peace now. That's a bit of a stretch, I admit, but maybe there's something there. And I like that. That's from Matthew. I like that interpretation. Mm-hmm. So those are our emails. Once again, you can email us host@stormpodcast.com. Spoilers, no spoilers, whatever you like. Send us an email there. We have a few more that we will get to in our storm section. You can go to our website, stormpodcast.com, for like the latest, of our schedule and news and updates and all of that. All our information is there. Follow us on Twitter @stormpodcast, when you want to, catch up on when the episode has come out or which characters most people want to see kissing on the show, a really important thing that we do over on our Twitter account. So you might want to check that out. That's run by our fabulous producer, Diana. And lastly, if you want to leave us some reviews, we would love to have them. This week, we do not have any 5-star reviews, but we do have a couple new reviews. So I will read those really quickly. The first one is a 4-star review from Cronus451. Which is titled Mostly Enjoyable, Potential to be Great. Fun listen that will give you new insights into Lost. There are 3 things I think could make the podcast better. I wish they didn't describe the premise of the podcast during the beginning of every episode of the podcast. I feel like by now any listener will know how it works. Number two, more spoiler talk in the storm. I feel like most people interested enough in a Lost podcast have seen the show already. Most of the audience wants to talk about it with spoilers, I'd imagine. Number three, similarly, I wish they didn't repeatedly talk about how they can't talk about things in the calm, the constant censoring of conversation, and calling a hint into the censoring of conversation feels unproductive. Those points aside, I still enjoy hearing different perspectives on a show I love and some of the ongoing gags / segments. P.S. To reviewers who lower their score based on too much Lost/Jack criticism, how boring would an uncritical podcast on Lost be? You should be able to critique the things you love. So, thank you, Cronus451, because I feel like in your critique of our podcast, maybe you are critiquing something you love. I'm always trying to get more spoiler talk in the storm. So that's a good feedback. I do think we need to keep the premise at the top because, you know, every week we're getting some new folks listening, and every week we want to make sure they understand the rules.
To address that point, there, if we do a significant amount of non-Lost talking, before we actually start, if you look at your podcast device, there's a time code for when the calm starts. So you can, if you are a professional Storm of Spoilers listener that's become the Storm listener and you don't need it like listed out for you, you could just jump ahead to that first time code and get right in the episode.
Whoa.
Well, thank you, Dave. Love it.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And then this last review comes from Magatma. 3 stars. Confused. The individuals in Lost are flawed characters, and that is what makes them interesting. I watch and admire the heroic acts and decry the cruel ones. The amount of excuses made by Joanne for some characters' actions and then her absolute censor of other characters' actions are baffling to me. I hope she would consider the inconsistencies of her opinions. I guess all I would say in response to that email is podcast hosts too are flawed individuals, and sometimes we have soft spots and favorites. So am I more forgiving of the character of Sawyer than I am other people? Yes, but I guess what I did a whole podcast episode about my problematic faves on TV, on this feed with Kristen Russo. You can go back and listen to it. And we talked about why we're more forgiving of character types like Sawyer. So, you know, yeah, we all have our favorites and people that we root for a little bit more than others. So that's, you know, that's the truth of it. Anyone else have any?
Yeah, Joanne.
At least it was with an E. Joanne with like no vowel after the end bugs me, but at least Joanne with an E like gets almost there. And that's it for reviews. You can leave us a review, critical or non, over on iTunes. We really appreciate those reviews. Helps folks find us. And that is everything that I have to say.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's time to talk about Lost. Neil, remind us what happened this week on the island.
Well, in this episode, the whole truth. This was directed by Karen Gaviola. It was written by Elizabeth Sarnoff and Christina M. Kim. It aired on March 22, 2006, and it takes place on days 60 and 61 on the island. In flashbacks, we learn that Jin and Sun previously tried to have a baby, but struggled, compounding the trouble they already had based on Jin's work as muscle for Sun's crime boss father. Which is totally chill, as you know. We also learned that the reason why is because Jin tested as infertile, and the doctor didn't want to tell him because he didn't want to get a huge beatdown from Jin. On the island, Jin wrecks Sun's garden in an attempt to keep her on the beach, where he believes he can keep her safe. That, as you know, does not go over well, nor does it help later when Sun finds out that she's pregnant now on the island. It's an island miracle, yay. In Hatch News... Locke recruits Ana Lucia to interrogate Henry Gale. While Jack and Locke talk it out in the bathroom, she convinces Henry to draw a map to his balloon, then recruits her, like, best friend Saeed and his new, lieutenant Charlie to take off into the jungle after it.
A really natural threesome. I think you'll all agree.
No, joy. So much joy. Elsewhere, Bernard forgot Rose's birthday. Come on, Bernard. It all ends with a very tense conversation over cereal that involves Jack, Locke, and old Henry Gale. Boom. Lost. I wonder if they have any milk. Fun fact, Michael does not appear in this episode.
Whoa!
Yeah, that's crazy. This week's calm question, if you were Bernard and you forgot Rose's birthday because you lost track of how time works, what would you try and get her that's better than a pearl? Dave, do you have any... What could you get on the island that would be like an okay birthday gift?
Yeah, see, that's kind of tough. I would say if you could get any of the premium food that's been hidden away in the jungle, that would be a plus. But let's assume I'm not metaing it and I'm actually living on the island. I would attempt to do origami gifts.
Oh.
Because I think that shows like some effort and some thoughtfulness, but also if they discard it, I'm not going to feel bad about it because it's just origami, but I don't have to, you know, catch an oyster in the ocean with a net, which seems like, you know, a little bit of overconfidence in my surviving skills.
Hmm. Interesting. Joanna.
I'm of two minds on this. I mean, I think that it would help to know what kind of gift Rose likes to receive. And, hopefully Bernard knows that, but he might not. So if Rose is like me and she likes to get something that she is like absolutely going to use all the time. And then I was like trying to think of what I've seen Rose do. and then I got like kind of nervous with my answer because my answer is actually if I were Bernard and I wanted to get my wife Rose something and she was the practical type and really liked things she could use, I would make her a drying rack out of bamboo because I've seen Rose do a lot of laundry. So I would make her like a folding drying rack out of bamboo so she didn't have to use like a clothing line if she didn't want to. That being said, there are plenty of women who'd be like, fuck you, dude, you got me a drying rack.
But you are on an island of mystery and... There's and not like a target.
Right. And so like, I think plenty of women would want the pearl. I would not want the pearl. I would want the drying rack. But so I'm curious if our listeners are listening, if they're more of a, are you guys, Neil and Dave, are you more like, make me a drying rack or whatever my equivalent of that is, or fetch me a pearl? What kind of gift receivers are you?
Definitely more drying rack.
Yeah, personally. Drying rack.
Yeah.
Like my idea would be I would get some more tarps and I would expand our homestead.
Oh, that we're building. So I would like add on a the room. House.
Yeah. I mean, you just gotta, cause like you're on an island. There's a lot of mystery. You're already Bernard and Rose. So like just make yourselves more comfortable.
I like
is
that.
What I'm saying.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, on the drying rack front, Saeed and Charlie appear to be building a galley, for the camp, right? They're building like a dining room table slash something else next to it.
Stage for the, reunion at Drive Shaft.
It does look like a stage. And then they're like, it's a table. And I'm like, is it? Okay. Anyway, appears to be some kind of galley.
It's a nice stage. Yeah, let's stick with the, before we get into the meat of the episodes and stick with the weird side questions this episode bestows upon us. What do you guys think Sawyer wants to be more sexy about? Are you there, God? It's me, Margaret.
Oh, the period stuff, right?
Yeah, he's like, the book could use more sex. And I'm like, weird choice for Sawyer to make that comment with this week's book. Yeah. Weird.
That's
weird,
just, Sawyer. You know, that's just Sawyer being Sawyer is all it is.
So speaking of writing, though, I do want to point out, so this episode, as Dale mentioned, is written by Liz Sarnoff and Christina Kim, and who will go on, don't look it up what it is, newcomers. You'll just get there in your own time. This pair also happened to write this is a great episode of Lost. I think this is a fantastic episode of Lost. I really like it. Mm-hmm. I like all the stories. This lovely pair also happened to have the writing credit on the empirically worst episode of Lost. So that's something to know. That being said, I think we were knocking the show a bit in the first season for like not having enough female writers or not having anyone who was Asian on the staff to write the Sun and Jin stuff. So the fact that they have two women and one woman of Asian descent on this episode, you know, for a Sun and Jin episode, or this feels actually more like a Sun episode than a Sun and Jin episode, makes me happy. So good job, Lost. This is you're only in season two and you're already doing better. So love to see it. Love to see it.
Forward progress in the Sun and Jin episode, arc. But there is something you have down here in notes, which I think starts off the episode a bit jarringly, which is that in order to see like a full Jin arc by the end of the episode at the top of the hour, Jin has to be sort of uncharacteristically mean about Sun being in her garden. You know, we have to set the stakes and whatnot, but it's also been a week and a half since, we had the bad Charlie turn, and, we sort of had to put hold on this, Jin fear that the others could be around, to have it resurface, just enough. And I think this sort of connects to a few of my complaints about maternity leave last week, which I'm now realizing maybe it's not complaints. Maybe there's something about, binge television, or like this world where certain seasons of TV start to feel like overly long when you watch them all in one chunk, that I've become less used to having to remind people where the characters are, you know, coming from every week, which I have to keep reminding myself, and Lost is a thing. So, since this is airing week to week, or sometimes not week to week because they'd have like gaps of an entire month where they aired reruns instead, we have to reground with the fact that Jin has a, you know, controlling streak to him that he likes to blame on the fact that he works for Sun's father. But I don't think it's really until we get into the flashbacks where we have like a series of just like devastating conversations, where it's Jin's assholishness comes from, I think, a more believable place. Yes. When it's about the stuff in the flashbacks than it is why is Sun not on the beach.
I feel like his fear in the garden, I mean, ripping up her plants is a bit much, but like, I feel like his fear in the garden is at least based on something like really recent and really scary, and he, you know, apologizes so thoroughly by the end of the episode that, I just, it works for me. And it works for me so much better than season one, Angry Jin, because that was just like, we talked about this at length in season one, but that was, a lot of that was about them trying to like hide the twist of Jin, which is actually, he's a pretty good dude. they're like, we got to keep it secret though. So then like his anger doesn't make sense to us. Even with like some cultural differences we might have. And so, you know, the fact that this anger is rooted in fear for Sun, and then he explains his outburst to her in the flashback about like, maybe if we have a kid, your father would like not put me in, like not make me do this awful work that I have to do. I mean, it's not the greatest reason to have a kid, but like, well, at least we immediately understand why he's lashing out the way he is, you know?
Well, not only is that good, but then later on when he's in the office and she's told she's infertile, and his first reaction is, did you know about this? It's a little bit more understanding than just assholish Jin, because we've had that one scene where he at least expresses like his hope. I guess, yeah, because of the way the week-to-week storytelling works, I also like it at the end because it ends in the apology. It just seems to, you know, be very, doesn't come out of nowhere. It's very blunt at the beginning.
It's a backslide.
Especially since we spent so much time liking Jin.
It's a big backslide. It's a big backslide for Jin. Yes, Neil.
It is, but I also think that, it also sort of adds to this incredible moment where he apologizes.
Yeah.
Like the acting in that scene between both of them is great.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's compounded by the fact that we've seen Jin come so far, you know, as to be less of a dick to his wife. I do think that I was never really bothered by the opening scene where he's super frustrated, because he really kind of would be in a panic moment, because he doesn't know what we know about why Jin was taken into the jungle. Why Sun was taken into the jungle. So, you know, he'd be kind of freaked out, you know? So I really like this episode. It's, like when you finally get to him and he like lays out that apology, it's just like, man, Jin really is a good dude.
He is.
Deep down in there.
they're in a bit of a bind because they need to have Angry Jin because we need to be reminded A, why this doctor would be afraid of him, and B, why Sun would be wanting to leave him. Right? So Angry Jin has to return. And Angry Jin on the island is so short-lived and really, I think, understandable that, it works for me. And the doctor's office scene in particular works for me because Sun has such like a nice cutting retort to him when he like loses his shit on her. She's like, oh yes, I was trying to entrap the fisherman's son. Like, fuck you, dude. Step off. So that works really well for me. Yeah. Yeah, but I hear what you're saying. Like, I am the one who wrote the note. I was like, oh, Return of Angry Jin. Like, thought we'd seen the last of him. But I think because it's not dragged out over several episodes and because his motivation feels clear to me in the way that, like, Charlie's maybe doesn't, it works for me. So.
Yeah, I think it's just something I'm going to try to keep in mind, as we go forward with Lost is, you know, when it's a Lost episode that is very character centric and not, there's a ticking time bomb on the island and we need to solve that. I feel like I'm not used to spending the first act of a show reestablishing like step one of a character. But then again, this is second season of a broadcast show that never knew it was going to live a binge life. So, I'm going to hopefully try to just keep that moving forward and be a little bit kinder to our first acts. maybe just for me though. You guys could be as hard on the first acts, as you want. So there's an argument on the beach. We get some flashbacks. But then Sun happens across arguing Rose and Bernard with this very entertaining subplot about birthday forgetting and is lightheaded because she's pregnant and barters for a pregnancy test from Sheriff Sawyer, who is really coming off as charming as possible for his forced position of having control over everybody. It's still great to see Sawyer, who wants everybody to hate him, also being unable to let somebody walk away from his tent after they come up and say hello. He just sort of
wants to make friends.
Yeah, he's like, I could just make them one at a time by giving them back things, like one little thing at a time.
And I mean, Josh Holloway's concern face, it really works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Really works. The way Sawyer is very, like, oddly gallant. I would say almost gallant this season. It's, you know, it's interesting. Also, I love Rose and Bernard. The squabbling Rose and Bernard works really well for me. And the fact that, like, even when they're united in their concern over Sun and, like, they're still squabbling, Rose is like, give her some room, back the fuck up. Like, it's just like, it's so good. Also, what they did, to this actress to make her look sick by putting like basically a base like foundation on her lips. Like she looks so awful just by making her lips look pale and like sweaty. You're just like, I had trouble like watching her. I was so anxious for her well-being. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is where I would like to say something that will make one of our emailers happy. I have a nice thing to say about Jack.
I'm ready.
The scene where Jack, Sun and Kate go to consult Jack and the advice he gives her might be Jack's best doctoring yet. Because he like gives her really good advice.
And he's with a disclaimer where he's like, I'm going to give you advice. I might not know what I'm talking about.
Sure. He's like, this is not necessarily for me to say. It's all up to you, but you really should. And ultimately it works out because Sun takes the advice, but shout out to Jack for not panicking. Like it's his stuff is so good. His advisor is so good that even Kate's like, wait, what's wrong with Jack? Like
you've been in the hatch a long time. You okay? Right? Yeah. Also, how does Charlie know about Henry Gale and Kate doesn't? Like that's a thing.
Because yeah, Saeed found him. Dark Charlie. Like, yeah. And Kate's not dark enough.
It was part of the recruiting pitch.
I know.
Like, I'll tell you all the secrets of the hatch if you join my cause.
To build this table. Like, I just, like, I don't understand, like, why Jack is hell-bent on keeping Kate out of the inner circle right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's better for us, the viewer, because we get, like, Kate goes on an adventure with Claire, and Kate hangs out with Sun.
She's still in the penalty box from the getting caught at the line.
That wasn't her fault, man. Come on.
I know, but Jack, you know that's what
she did kind of choose Team Sawyer.
If like, Jack and Locke are arguing about the button still, then Jack's absolutely still holding a grudge about like 3 weeks ago or 2 days ago.
Silly.
I mean, that would be a very Jack thing to do.
Yeah, I will say I agree. I really love when Jack is like, here's my, like, what does he say exactly? He says something like, here's my advice. And it's just that because I'm the last person to ask about this, but you should tell him. You know what I mean? Like, that's a really good, good sentence. And it comes right on the heels of Jack saying, as complicated as Jin being the last on the island to find out you spoke English. And I'm like, Jack, how many secrets do you keep? So many. So like, he got really close. He did pretty good, but I'm not going to give him marks for that.
That's fair. I mean, we all could benefit from taking our own advice.
Listen, like, one breath later, Kate's like, why are you in the hatch all the time? And he's like, don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it, sweetheart. Don't worry about it. You know? So, yeah.
Don't worry about it. We've got Ana Lucia, John Locke, and Saeed, and Charlie on the case. I'm sure it'll all work out fine.
And Mr. Echo.
Nobody's trying to keep secrets from anybody else.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Do you think the line where Ana Lucia says Jack and Locke are a little too busy worrying about Locke and Jack, is the best line in all of Lost, both past and future?
It is.
It seems like a weighted question.
It's a supreme dunk on Jack and Locke.
But because, it's just true. That's just like, it's just so true, you know?
Yeah. You guys are obsessed with each other and everyone can tell.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Echo's decided to like leave it alone. Saeed has found, you know, his angry group of people who are going to wait and see. And so.
And Kate is in the doghouse.
And Kate's in the doghouse. Vaulting off of last week's episode's conclusion where, Henry Gale managed to get to Locke. Locke decides to bring Ana Lucia in to question Henry Gale without telling Jack. And then she manages to get the map and gets out of there without telling Jack or Locke. And then she heads out with Saeed only for Henry Gale to tell Jack and Locke about the map. These guys are doing a very, very bad job at playing each other. It's like they saw Sawyer successfully con them all out of the guns.
And now everyone's like, oh, I can do that.
I could do that. Yeah, exactly. Sawyer's dumb. I'm smarter than Sawyer. I bet I could learn this con. And everybody is conning poorly. Just bad cons all around. I don't believe Henry Gale. I don't believe that Ana Lucia would tell no one besides Saeed, especially since the conversation between her and Saeed where she apologizes after that moment. It would seem like the apology would come before you go with the armed person into the jungle alone.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really tough question. What's the right time to apologize to the significant other of the person you killed accidentally?
Right. But it's kind of
not accidentally.
Everyone knows the right time. It's when Charlie's gone into the jungle to get papayas or whatever he's, I don't know where Charlie is in that moment.
It's when you wake up and Charlie's Saeed's out picking staring up
breakfast.
At you.
Yeah, second breakfast. Charlie's like 11-sies and you're like, oh, no, we gotta keep moving, but, so here's the deal. A bunch of our, first time watchers, in our Patreon Slack were saying that they were really pleasantly surprised by Ana Lucia in this episode, and this is maybe like the first time they liked Ana Lucia, and this is a tremendous rehabilitation rebound of the Ana Lucia character, right? Like, Michelle Rodriguez is turning the charm on. She's quipping, she's smiling, you know, she's getting shit done, she's being cautious as opposed to like, you know, extremely reactive earlier, all this sort of stuff. So this is a big like change for this character. And some of it feels like it could be a natural progression of something. And some of it feels like them realizing a character's not working the way that they want it to and just sort of like really switching things up.
People don't like Ana Lucia. What are we going to do? Well, what if she goes to Saeed? Okay, I'm liking this. They have conflict. That's good. Okay, what's she going to say? She's going to say people don't like her. Perfect. Put it in the script.
Yeah, it's a little lampshady, right? To be like, nobody likes me, and I don't know why. It's like, audience
person whose girlfriend
don't like
I shot, yeah. Who's who I'm talking to now for the first time.
I do,
on a secret mission.
I do think the part that works is the Locke conversation, right? So like, it when she sort of calls Locke out for like, you have not said one word to me since I've been here. What is it that you now want? But yeah, the Saeed thing is kind of weird. I don't know. They do a lot of maneuvering to get them where they need them to have her do the apology, which I think is sort of the big moment of this episode, other than like what happens right at the end, the mystery of what's happening at the end. But yeah, I guess we're trying to rehabilitate Ana Lucia on the fly. And that's, it's tough with a lot of other stuff going on. I feel like she really, if they don't start doing something with her, she would have gotten sort of lost.
I don't mind it because they've definitely done this with other characters, like, you know, I think
Rose and Bernard.
Well, no,
we haven't seen in like a month.
I mean, more like Sawyer, right? Like that. They soften the Sawyer character a bit because I think they like saw that the audience wanted to like him. I think they just didn't mean to make Ana Lucia as sort of alienating as she is. And I hate to sit here in 2020 and be like, well, you know, she's smiling now. She's a whole lot prettier when she smiles, don't you think? But I do think, for the record, for what it's worth, Michelle Rodriguez, looks fantastic in this episode.
Okay, good. That's where we're going to insert it. Yes. They start lighting her as if she's moist.
Okay.
Which,
okay.
Yeah. Like, so well, at first, because okay. at first, because she's like running across the beach, right? And you're like, she's sweating, and Locke calls it out, and you're like, cool. They just figured out a way to, you know, light her like she's sweaty on the beach, and she's like powerful and attractive. Great. But then they go on the jungle hike, and she keeps like shining. Like she's like lying on the ground and like he's staring down at her, watching her sleep, and it's just like this shining shoulder. And I'm like, why are you moistening her down and nobody else? It seems weird.
Okay.
I feel really weird about the fact that I was like, she looks great this episode. And you're like, yes, moist.
Well, sorry. My mind just interpreted it as like Joanna opened up the male gaze.
No, yes, I did expand it. That's exactly what I was doing. I was giving permission for us to talk about how attractive she is in this episode. I have always thought, and I think I've always said, that Ana Lucia's island wear, which is just that black camisole and the jeans and this, and the return of the vest in this episode, is like maybe my number one favorite island look. I really love it. And like, you know, they decide when and where her like camisole is going to ride up to show you like her hips or whatever. So like, that's the whole thing. Yes, I am opening the gates on that. I just didn't think that the word that would come so quickly from you was moist because.
Yeah. Yeah. That surprised me too. I was like, she looks so shiny, wet.
Dewy.
Yeah. Oh, Dewy's okay, I guess.
It's better than moist, but.
Yeah, well, swing and a miss. I called it out. I stand by the spirit of my remarks.
Maybe she's found, maybe someone on the beach has been making like coconut oil reserves, you know.
Glowing. She's glowing.
She's glowing.
In situations she didn't used to glow.
Son's pregnancy test. No, I'm just sorry.
No, that was the one pregnancy test, and everyone else is fucked if they even try to have unprotected sex on the island.
We're going to talk about more in the storm, but I saw some reactions from people like they didn't like the Claire baby storyline was so hit and miss, and I think that's true. That I think some people are like don't want that to be Son's journey. All I can say is we can only talk about that really in the storm.
Ooh, that was a nice tease for something we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
Later.
They do address that a little bit in the official podcast, for this week. Just that they said, don't worry. If Son gets as far as Claire, it'll be in season 7 because we're only on day 60 something.
That's true.
So it's not all pregnancy storylines are the same. Stay tuned for the storm.
I think, I remember, I'm not saying the same thing is going to happen, but I remember, I was interviewing Amy Poehler, for Parks and Recreation, like right when Leslie Knope got pregnant, like found out she was pregnant, and they had just done the Anne pregnant storyline on, Parks and Rec. And so I was like, are we going to do like a pregnancy storyline again? And she's like, no. I promise not. No. And we were like, well, how not? And she's like, we're not. I can't say. And then Parks and Recreation was like, boom, time jump. She's got kids are all like four now and she never talks about them. And it was like, okay. so anyway,
there's lots of weird, mysterious ways.
It's a jungle mystery. Like,
that's one of the things that's nice about Lost season 2 versus Lost season 1 is Lost season 1 is like, hey, she's pregnant. Hey, they don't speak English. Hey, he used to be in a wheelchair. Hey, he's a drug addict. And they really only had enough episodes to sort of like maybe add one complication to those things. Now, you know, Sun could be more than just another pregnant person. Although she is the only person who's taken gardening seriously, which
I was going to say, she still has a garden.
She does, yes.
She's,
maybe Sun with her, like, mysterious, unnecessary knowledge of herbs is the one making coconut oil, lotion for anyone who wants it on the beach.
She's the assistant. Okay, anyone who wants to shave, she can come up with new shaving lotion.
Yeah, she's the, use coconut oil to shave.
She's the assistant to the doctor, who is sometimes more useful than the doctor. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I do not define Sun by her pregnancy. I define her as very useful person in this mystery society.
Okay, can we talk about Charlie? Because
Dark Charlie?
I mean, this is medium. This feels like medium roast Charlie, right? Like the hoodie's down or off completely. He's
sure.
Fetching fruit. He's being a little nasty to Alessia, but kind of in a fun comic relief way when he's like, oh, psych, I'm giving the gun to Saeed. Like, you know, it's kind of fun. But like this feels like them still not knowing what to do with Charlie, so they're like, okay, Anna. And so you're going to the jungle. Charlie, you can come too. But that's kind of been Charlie from the start, right? Like, it's like Jack and Kate are going to the jungle. Charlie too, you know, sort of thing.
Hurley's in the jungle. Charlie's with him.
Right.
Yeah. No, I like that position. Basically, because that particular party to go out to the balloon, like Saeed and Ana Lucia and Charlie, doesn't really make sense on paper. But I love all of the scenes of them doing it. And it's just because I like all of those actors and their characters. And so it kind of, I overlook the fact that maybe Charlie shouldn't be there. And I'm kind of unclear on where Charlie got that gun.
He got it from Sawyer.
Doesn't he know where Sawyer's stash is?
Well, no, Sawyer gave it to him for helping.
Oh, okay.
With the big con that was the only con on the island.
So yeah, and also everybody's very blasé with the secret gun. I like it, even though it doesn't make sense because as the aforementioned, that conversation should happen before you go into the jungle. I'm sorry, I killed your friend. I hope you don't hate me. But now that they're all out there, they did a really good job of that classic, television trope of making me like a grouping and then immediately putting them in peril by having them searching the jungle while Henry Gale is, sort of voicing out an alternate, trap that he may or may not have, set up for them to set up this week's cliffhanger, which seems viable. There are no side looks that Henry Gale gives in this episode that makes me think, he's not. Like, even if he is telling the truth, he's had enough of being tortured and he does not trust these people and might, like, you know, not care if they live or die. It's, man. Anyway, I wonder if they have milk.
I think the hardest thing about watching Michael Emerson's performance as Henry Gale is that Michael Emerson is so good, you kind of have no choice but to believe him. And Henry Gale has told us all kinds of stuff so far. So it's like, what is this guy?
I think Michael Emerson is so good that I have no choice but to alternatively believe him and distrust him.
Right.
Henry Gale, any way the wind blows.
Yeah, you know. you totally flew a balloon here, but you would also blow us all up.
Absolutely.
In a second.
Maybe. I don't know. It's just, Michael Emerson, you god.
Yeah. I mean, and so if you think about it at this point, he has really gone through the best of two, a season and a half's worth of characters. Like, all of the best conversationalists, shall we say, have interrogated Henry Gale, and we still don't have any idea what's going on with him.
I want a Henry Hurley conversation, right? We haven't had one of those.
Yeah.
Oh, Henry Hurley would be good, and then Henry Sawyer, just to see what happens.
Ooh.
I don't ever want to talk to Sawyer.
Well, Sawyer being...
They could have a book club.
Yeah.
Sawyer could... He could probably spot a good con if that's what's happening here. Although, he's persona non grata with his gun collection. So
I get, that must have been it. Yeah, because he did the whole sheriff pull and nobody likes him, that's why nobody thought, why not ask the con man if this guy's pulling a con? Have you seen this con before? Oh yes. Old Wizard of Oz con.
I guess I'll go back and say if Jack has not told Kate about Henry, because he does not want Sawyer to know, because Sawyer pulled such a power play on him, and he thinks Kate will tell Sawyer, then I kind of understand why Jack is keeping it secret from Kate.
That's true. Because,
he's trying to get some of his power back. You know what I mean? So
I think part of why Jack is mad is it's not just about the guns. It's that in the con, she sort of chose Sawyer over him. As part of the con. Kate sort of made her choice. So that's maybe why he's pissed at Kate. You don't want Sawyer to know, because he does have the guns.
He does have
and
the guns.
And he's a dick about everything. And Jack knows it.
At some point, when everybody finds out, things are going to be bad for everybody who knows. Quiet, Nico, I'm talking. And it's going to be... It's going to be bad news. Really, if this guy ends up being not, the most horrible person on the island, then they have secretly tortured a person in the hatch for 3 days. And then not telling Kate means that there isn't even a ruling class. There's a chance that everybody on that island could be the tortured because they're not amongst the torturer group.
Torturer. Meanwhile, I would like to shout out, I already mentioned this briefly, but I want to shout out Kate and Son and their bonding over taking this pregnancy test. And, I just thought it was a really lovely sequence. All of it.
Oh, good. We're talking about this. They were both moist. No, I'm sorry. Continue on. It was a great part of the episode.
I mean, Son was sweaty because she's
she had recently vomited.
She's nauseous. So I'll give you, Sun was covered in water from her face. Okay, anyway. The Sun and Kate stuff and the, and then Kate being well, what we gotta do. And Sun's I don't wanna talk to Jack, sort of stuff, all of that. really said, well, and I like when Kate talks to other women on the island. I think it's good.
Yeah, helpful Kate has had 2 good weeks. No one's telling her anything, but she's been doing good. The Lord's work.
Who does fly with a pregnancy test? Whose pregnancy test do we think it was? I said Shannon before we started recording. So, my vote is for Shan.
I'm going to go Cindy, because who flies with a pregnancy test? A flight attendant.
Mm. Oh. Well, that feels generalizing. I don't know.
Well, because there's a percentage of time they're in the air.
True.
Yeah. I wasn't saying they get pregnant at a higher rate than other types of women, Neil.
I want it to be one of the male characters, because I think that would be funny, personally. I think Sawyer would have one. I'm trying to think of
what gonna need one.
Which male character is enough of a piece of shit to think he's gonna need one. And I think that's Sawyer. It could be Charlie. but I definitely think it's Sawyer.
Charlie, the state he was before he got on the flight.
Yeah.
Remember?
He's a rock and roll guy.
I don't think he had the wherewithal to even, be responsible enough to have a pregnancy
test
or something.
But Sawyer's, his game is a long, it takes a long time. So, and he's getting deep into relationships. So I think Sawyer would be the most likely male character.
Scott and or Steve.
Sure.
Whichever one of them is I think it's Steve. Whichever one of them is, shacking up with, a married woman on the beach.
Or it was Michael, but he's just very confused about how those tests work. What he wanted was a paternity test.
Fun fact, Michael has not been on the show for 5 weeks. All right.
He's out there doing something. Do you want to get to our corners before we head into the storm section?
I do. Where should we start?
Let's start here at the top with the Jungle of Mystery moment, which has been changed to something in all caps. It says everything Henry says and does.
It's just Henry Gale. He's the Jungle of Mystery. This week.
Yes. At one point, it would also said that the pregnancy test is a Widmore brand pregnancy test.
Oh.
And hey, check out that name.
Yeah, I moved that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's important, and they call it out.
But we've talked about Widmore, the brand, right?
We have. As a matter of fact, yes, we have. We're going to go jump to the official podcast check-in where they elaborate a little bit on that. And once again, I get to bring up the Lost experience. Here we go. This week's question. This is a conversation between Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse, the showrunners for Lost. Damon Lindelof says, this is regarding the HanzoFoundation.org by Zeke's brother. So what's the deal with the website? It's been down forever. Is there a purpose or am I missing a secret way to get in? And Carlton Cuse says, no, that's actually very observant. It's sort of like a ride at Disneyland being remodeled. The Hanzo Foundation website is down for remodeling, and when it comes back up, it's going to be awesome. In fact, we're going to kind of let you guys in on a secret. We're involved in a project which is going to involve the internet that's going to start in May. Damon Lindelof says in May, but you're going to have to watch the show, and not just the show, but what happens between the show. Carlton Cuse says between the acts of the show. Damon Lindelof says, sort of fairly carefully, in order to sort of begin the path on this, what we're calling an experience. Carlton Cuse says yes, and this internet experience will actually be launched during one of the shows in May, and it'll be a pathway to lead to a lot of information about the show that we're not going to get on the show, but it's just sort of ancillary, a real mythology, blah, blah, blah. So that's hinting at the Lost experience, which Widmore is going to play into. It was on the internet. I forget what episode exactly it links onto, but I have been making promises to do something of the Lost experience here. I don't think we're going to cover the entirety of the Lost experience as it was happening.
We're not.
Because that's weird other podcasts. Yeah, blogs. We're not going to happen. But when there were some key moments that happened, definitely when it kicks off in May, what that clue was, and then sort of where we end up, I think at the beginning of season 3 when it wraps up and what we learned. I might mention here or there, but that's the official podcast check-in this week. Also this week on the official podcast check-in, if you want to go listen to it, where it's archived, they decide on theme music for their podcast, and it's mostly that meaningless banter I just read where they're talking about songs. So not a bunch of great information, the official podcast check-in, but all of their little Easter eggs that are showing up, bands that you're pretty sure don't exist and brands that you're pretty sure don't exist, are actively feeding into an online experience that ran between seasons 2 and 3. So don't Google it yet, but do know that they're, planting mysteries that pay off in an online experience if you have weird questions about something that appears on Lost.
I think I found, that link, that HanzoFoundation.org, does not work anymore, apparently. But if you search Hanzo Foundation, for those of you who are willing to, in the storm, somebody does still have a version of it up. That's fascinating.
Ooh, maybe you could live the Lost experience somehow. I'll look into that. Yeah. I'll look into that between episodes.
Okay.
All right. the Boone Carlisle Memorial Falling Down Award in honor of poor Boone. This week goes to Sun's Plants, who were ripped out of the ground and fell right down. Which is good, otherwise you had to give them to Henry Gale's wife, who once again fell out of the sky. Really the worst way to fall.
Yeah, and then Jin helps put them back.
Yeah. Is that how plants work? You just rip them out of the ground violently and just rebury them and things
depends.
Are fine?
Depends how you rip them.
Yeah.
If the roots are intact and it's not been that long, then yeah, you could put them back in the ground.
Well, he's also about to find out that he is both sterile and about to be a father. So anything's possible.
It's a lot of information all at once.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess that's the juggle of mystery moment.
It's a miracle.
Miraculous pregnancy / guilty look at the end of this episode.
I mean, I feel like on an island where a wheelchair man walks and one of our children has disappeared and become both moist and teleporting, that a pregnancy of people who had a scene a couple episodes ago where the man shirtlessly and triumphantly walks out of his wife's tent makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
But that's just been a couple days ago.
Right.
And that's not how quickly you find out you're pregnant. Also, so you're saying, the island healed, Jin's what? Do we think it's low motility? His vas deferens, what do you think is, anyway, we don't need to go into
narrow that. Urethra.
Lazy
just widen that urethra right up.
We'll talk about Sun's guilty look at the end of this episode, I guess. We haven't mentioned Jai Li yet, by the way. We should. The return of Jai Li, her blind date. He's back.
Oh yeah, he's English. Back. The woman he left her for, has left him. And
my how the turntables.
He's still a hotel manager's son.
Yeah.
Or manager of the hotel. Manager of the hotel is Adams.
He's a rich
son
guy.
Son of the hotel manager.
Son of the hotel manager.
Can I read the Memorial Ironic Statement Award?
You can.
This week's Leslie R's Memorial Ironic Statement Award goes to one Mr. Charlie Pace, who says to one Ana Lucia, I don't remember her last name, as I recall, the last time you had a gun, you murdered someone. That's oh-ho-ho rich coming from you, Charlie Pace, because the last time you had a gun, you murdered Ethan Rome. So, not saying he didn't deserve it, probably, but, you know.
He adjusted some light kidnap gaslighting, you know. minor infractions.
No, didn't he snap?
It's not like he was moist.
Scott's neck and or Steve's neck. Someone's neck got snapped.
Oh yeah, and like broke all their bones.
Yeah,
and,
like every bone in their body and came up from the ocean, which is a real bitch move if you ask me. Anyway.
Yeah, I think I'm still pro shooting Ethan.
Yeah. I'm fine with shooting Ethan. I'm just not fine with Charlie high-roading Ana Lucia. I mean,
that's true.
You know. So yeah. All right. Can we talk about Jungle of Kistry moment?
Mm-hmm. Can we?
Great. So first we're going to do, last week I forgot to do the results until the storm section. So I apologize, but here they are in the calm for this week. We're talking about the Jungle of Kistry, our shameless ripoff of the Buffering Podcast Central Extension Award. You guys vote on this. We put them up on Twitter. We three pick one and our listeners in our Slack, Patreon Slack, pick another. So the results of last week. This is maternity leave when we had the girl group go into the jungle and some Henry Gale shenanigans in the hatch. So, the loser is Mr. Echo and Rousseau, with only 11% of the vote thereabouts.
I had a whole plot line for that. Nobody liked it.
Please write us some like Echo Rousseau fan fiction because I think their muscle definition on their upper arms alone. Talk about moist. Also, quick shout out to Rousseau. Rousseau is on this poll twice. A quick shout out to Rousseau. There was a renewed discussion of shaving on this island, body hair on this island, because Ana Lucia asks Henry Gale why he doesn't have a beard. And we also see Locke shave in this episode. And so, like, why do the characters not have any body hair? or more beards on this island. And I just want to say that something I said in our Slack, which is that if Danielle Rousseau, a French woman who's off her rocker, who's been alone in the jungle for over a decade, does not have any armpit hair, then none of the women on this island are going to have any armpit hair. Okay.
It's just something.
That's the magic of the island.
Yeah, you're just going to have to suspend your disbelief for this one thing.
Someone has made them goop that they have used to wax themselves clean. Anyway, so Kate, speaking of, Kate and Rousseau comes in at 25% of our vote for last week's Jungle of Kistery. I submitted myself and Mr. Echo. really joking. I mean, not joking because I would, but, you know, didn't expect to get a lot of vote, but thank you guys. 28.5% of the vote. Like, thank you for shipping me with Mr. Echo. I'm honored. But the winner of last week's Jungle Kissery Moment, poll, 34% of the vote, John Locke and Henry Gale. And, I think Locke might have it this week as well, because our nominees this week, Dave, who have you submitted for your Jungle of Kistery moment?
I'm picking Rose and Bernard. There was a little bit of birthday forgetfulness, but the dude trekked across the entire island and is, you know, making an empty pearl gesture. I say kiss and make up, Rose and Bernard.
Cut Bernard some slack.
Love it.
Yeah.
Our listener Phil in our Patreon Slack nominated Saeed and Ana Lucia, and I guess probably based off the fact that Saeed was staring at Ana Lucia while she slept moistly. So Saeed,
that's the way to her heart. That's the Goodwin way to her heart.
Staring at
Ana
Lucia.
Oh man, that's true.
Yeah. So Saeed and Ana Lucia, that's from our listener Phil. I submit a thruple. Jin and Sun and Jai Li. I just think Jai Li is really handsome. Also, shout out to Jin and Sun because, with the episode opens with Sun coming out of the bathroom in this like amazing green, like negligee or whatever. And Jin's like, hey, turn around. Yeah. Auga. And then like it's a scene that we've seen in TV before, but usually it's like the honeymoon or whatever. This is 1 year into their marriage. So 1 year
very in, quickly takes a turn.
It does take a turn, unfortunately. But 1 year in, Sun is still trying. So, you know, keeping the romance alive. So the thruple of Jin and Sun and Jai Li, maybe everyone can be happy that way. And Neil, I wanted to end with you because I think you got a real power move here. What's your Jungle of Kistery moment here?
Well, mine is clean shaven Locke and towel dry Jack.
Jack does not put the towel around his head.
they are getting really comfortable with each other down in that hatch. So I feel like they're going to have a chance to win this poll the most times of anybody.
Jack walks out of the shower and he's like, "Why, sir, my modesty, you caught me. You couldn't wait till I was done a showering
couldn't
or
wait
like,
till
whatever."
I was done.
And then like, and then doesn't cover himself up. Like what's happening there?
No, that's a real power move because at that point you're just like, I'm going to make him pay.
and then Locke's like, oh, you know, the steam, it makes me very moist. It opens up my pores so I can shave better.
I'm here to deliver my strategic play in the con I have no end game for.
I love that move though. That's a great move from Locke where he's like, what do you think about Ana Lucia doing it? Okay, cool. She's in there right now.
It is good, but again, what's none of these people have an endgame, especially Jack and Locke, who are just worried about who has the most power between them. Anyway,
so they're
just worried about the door code.
Yeah.
Right. This poll will go up on our official Twitter. Once again, that's Rose and Bernard from Dave, Jin and Sun and Jai Li from Joanna, Saeed and Ana Lucia from Phil, and clean shaven Locke and towel dry, barely towel dry. I mean, if you want to
right,
talk about,
maybe it should be air dry Jack.
Yeah, or like moist Jack.
Moist Jack. That's the t-shirt. All right. Book club, as we mentioned before, is Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. We also get a little Brothers Karamazov, but we covered that previously. So I think we are done, and we will see you for the storm right after this.
Now is the time on our show where we like to thank our Patreon subscribers at the $10 level or above, including our newcomers. So I'm going to start with Katie Boyd, Michelle Tepper, Jason Allen, Jimmy Luck Taylor, Shante Gonzalez, Cloderic Mars, John Shen, Soren Purtz, Jennifer Caldwell, Anne Vardaman, Jennifer Trice, Kristen Butterfield, Rosa, Jana Gardner, Jamie Smith, David G, Melissa Beerley. Oh, sorry, David G is in three-part harmony. Are you ready? David G.
David G.
I'm terrible at the harmony part.
Giancarlo, Lord of the Soups, and Warden of the Grill, and Stephen Miller, not that Stephen Miller. Thank you guys so much.
And I would like to add to those thanks William Eggert, Susan Shirley, Weed Detective, Molly Callahan, Gabriel Busco, Pat Juckins, Angelica Cotto, Lauren Reed, Grace O'Keefe, Jefferson Grubbs, Catherine Davis, Dickie Moe, The Ghost of Ghost, ooh, hello, Jeffrey Saroy, Caroline, Patrick Gallagher, Cindy Schultz, Caleb O'Brien, Rob Thurman, and Tony Perez. Thank you very much.
Wow. And I would like to thank the following fine humans: Jason Allen, D Donuts, Joe Galena, Aaron Badillo, Ole Ballman, okay, Catherine Altmaier, Bryce Pulse, Anya Suzanne Sonnes, Diana Fisher, Sam Williams, Delia Voch, or Voch, Beth Weingarner, Mike Harris, Matthew Wilson, Joe Garfine, Grayson Owen, Rachel Simon, Wava Corvallis, Thomas Hatfield, and Frank Perinello. Thank you all very much.
And we are back talking about the storm. Congratulations, everybody. Nobody called him Ben this week.
I've gotten really, really used to thinking of him as Henry.
I also almost just slipped up, and then for a second I was going to say Michael Emerson. I'm like, no, you can't say Michael Emerson. So I'm all turned around. But at least it's worked out.
I think we've maybe tipped our hand that Henry is not like a... three episode
I think
guest.
Maybe the show has also tipped its hand at this point.
Because we love him so much.
Because he's so good. But it's like, Man, can you imagine a scenario, the Lost season 2 scenario in which they were like, no, we're good. We don't need any more Michael Emerson. Those couple episodes are good. Like, that would have been just a real terrible outcome.
The other thing I was thinking about, I don't know why this episode I was thinking about it, but I was watching it and thinking about if I were to write the Lost reboot show that I've always advocated, which is it's a one show about something else, and then at the end of the first season it reveals that it's actually been a Lost sequel the whole time, how that would actually be hard because you want to use these good actors from that era of television, but they've all been on Lost. So you couldn't do it, because in order for that reveal to work, you couldn't have, like, Michael Emerson on your otherwise great character actor show. You couldn't have, you know, Evil Season 2 be Lost 2 Season 1. So tough. Anyway, I'm going to do it, though. I'm going to do it eventually. This week, we see the return of Locke Antagonist check-in. Locke seems to be making some chaos plays.
No!
Okay.
He's making power plays. Why would you call it a chaos play? Isn't a chaos play Jack letting Henry just like out of the vault?
I mean, ish, but there's also like two people that I think letting the person who's most recently murdered a person and has actually killed others into the vaults.
Asked Ana Lucia to start an army with him, so like it's not like he's holding her at arm's length. I think,
also, yeah, but they also not really doing it.
Locke knows she's a cop, right?
He said so.
Yeah,
like,
so
you're
he
a cop.
So that, I mean, I guess the next, like, you've gone through the soldier who is a torturer. You've let Mr. Echo take the spiritual route, I guess. She's kind of the next choice. I think that the more chaos-y play here is what Ana Lucia does than what Locke does. Locke actually seems like he's making a reasonable choice to be like, hey, she probably has some training in interrogating people because of her copness. And, you know, the problem was you shouldn't trust Ana Lucia.
Yeah, but Ana is, she's trying to find concrete information. She's not being impulsive or chaotic. She's like,
yeah, I guess.
Let's find out for fucking certain if there is a balloon out here. I'm not convinced by this lack of balloon in this clearing. Let's keep looking, you know?
I mean, I guess, it is weird that she doesn't tell either Locke or Jack.
Well, Locke and Jack are a little too worried about Locke and Jack. No, I mean, I think what we're seeing is Locke and Jack are having a dick measuring contest in the hatch because Sawyer has emasculated both of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're having a dick measuring contest in the hatch of like, I'm in charge. No, I'm in charge. No, I'm in charge. And then Ben is just like, whoa.
He's like, you guys are idiots. This is easy.
I know how this works. You dummies.
How do you not know things?
Yeah. So, that's what I don't think anyone is being particularly chaotic except for freaking Ben. Ben is our agent of chaos, is he not?
Yes, but knowingly.
What's true, what's flawed about your Locke antagonist check-in concept entirely is that the antagonist of the TV series Lost is Ben and or the Man in Black, depending on what season you're in. It's not John Locke. And so, now that we're in Ben territory, every week you're going to come out with hey, Locke antagonist. I'm like, what the fuck is Ben doing over here if not antagonizing everyone all the time, right? No?
Yeah, but everybody knows Ben's the antagonist of Locke. What I'm presupposing is, what if he isn't?
Well, all right then.
Good. Good deep cut, Dave. Thank you, Dave.
All
right.
I like it.
Speaking of, Ana Lucia having a smart way of questioning Ben, you put in the notes here, which is absolutely correct, which is they're making Ana Lucia nicer because they're probably thinking they're going to kill her off.
They already know. They definitely already know they're about to kill her. So they're like, hey, Michelle, can you smile more? I absolutely think that that's what is going on with Ana Lucia's character reversal. They've abandoned the let's build an army plan, even though Locke mentions it in this episode. That's not happening. Saeed is making tables. No one's making an army. And they're going to kill her. So they're like, okay, let's make audiences care about her before we kill her.
Yeah. If you're Michelle Rodriguez and you're frustrated with how this has gone so far, That's one pitch that you might be receptive to is like, all right, well, okay, we'll kill off your character, but we're going to try and make everybody like her first, which,
I'm not sure how successful it is because she fucks Sawyers for guns or something like that. And you're just like, what's happening? But in this episode, it really works. It's a great Ana episode. And she doesn't have to be like Sunshine and Puppy Dog Tales, and she's not, but this episode is a good, a good model for how they could have used Michelle Rodriguez in a way that we were all on board with, because she's still tough, and she's still all this, she's still a badass, and we don't want to fuck with her, but and I like her scenes with Henry, with Ben, you know what I mean? I think even if he's playing her a bit, I think it goes better than Locke talking to Henry for sure. So I don't know. I just, it's too bad that it's a little bit of too little too late. You know what I mean?
Yes. But I mean, Ana Lucia could be in my Lost sequel if it's set before Lost. Then they could all be in it.
Interested in the fact that I keep saying that Michael hasn't been in this episode? Ana Lucia. because it's very important for her when he comes back.
Yeah, that's true. I was also like, when's the last time we've said the word Walt on the podcast?
Dave almost said it in the calm.
I almost said, the moist one.
Yeah.
Moist person.
He's the he's soggy. There's a difference between being soggy. Moist and glistening and being like water is flowing out of you.
The podcast was a road to Moist Jack, and really we could have just started at Moist Jack and left it at Moist Jack, but that was the pinnacle.
I would like to apologize to any of our listeners who are triggered by the word M-O-I-S-T, because this has not been a good time for you. Also, I should clarify.
Yes, apologies instead of disclaimers. I like that pause.
The episode that these writers wrote is Stranger in a Strange Land, which we all agree is the worst Lost episode.
What's the Jack Tattoo episode?
This is that tattoo that's really standing out these days.
It's not good. It's not good. Okay, but speaking of a future episode, I want to talk about this upcoming Sun episode and a season 3 episode where we do find out that she did sleep with Jai Li. And it just sort of, I don't know, it retroactively makes this episode weaker for me a little bit. Like, I still love this episode, but like a lot of the Sun stuff, I don't know. It feels like, I mean, she gives this look at the end that's, you know, she's like, I swear I never slept with anyone else. I swear. And then like it becomes kind of clear by the last shot that she was lying, right? Like,
yeah, that was their intent. At least they talk about it on the official podcast. They're like, did we get the whole truth and the whole truth? Oh,
well, what makes it weirder is that the baby is really Jin's, right? Like, as far as we know.
Yeah, it was like, because Juliet does like a, basically the reason it matters, right, is that if Sun conceived before she got on the island, she's safe. And if she conceived after, like, she's safe, like Claire was safe. And if she conceived after, she might die. Or, you know, the Jungle Mystery Science is a little foggy on this, but
right.
Her chances are not as good if it's Sun's baby, and they're better if they're if it's Jai Li's baby. And it turns out that it's Jin's baby, which is like a mixed blessing, but Sun's so happy. But then she still tells him. And then my memory is that Jin apologizes to her because he's like, I know the man you cheated on is not the man I am now, basically. But anyway, that whole Jai Li episode, the Glass Ballerina, is really confusing because like Jin is sent to, like, Sun's dad finds out that Sun and Nico really doesn't like this story. Anyway, Sun's dad finds out that she's having an affair with Jai Li. He sends Jin to beat Jai Li, to kill Jai Li, I think. And Jin can't do it, but Jai Li commits suicide anyway. And then Jin, like, sees his body with a string of pearls that Jai Li tried to give Sun in his hand. And, like, it always felt unclear to me whether or not Jin was supposed to, like, know at all, like, what was going on. Because in this episode, you know, that we just watched, The Whole Truth, like, it seems like he believes Sun. And then you kind of believe Sun until you don't. It's like, I don't know. But the whole thing, Sun is such an interesting character as she develops because, you know, she starts, I'm not super comfortable calling her a liar, but she starts as kind of a liar. And in later seasons, she's even more of a ruthless liar. Like, I just watched an episode, right, where she, like, you know, the Ajira flight has just landed on the island and she's with Ben, and Ben's like, oh, we're gonna go back to the island and figure out what's going on. And she's like, yep, 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 got it. And then she knocks Ben out. And then Lupitas is like, whoa, Son, why'd you do that? She's like, I lied. And like, that's later season Son. She's like, don't fuck with me and don't get in between myself and my husband. Like, get out of my way. And that's sort of like kind of who she is from the beginning, actually. And I don't know. It's just an interesting, arc to watch, you know?
Well, I think it becomes more proactive, like, why she's lying. But I guess we didn't talk about it in the column, but we did talk about it for the podcast. Like, when the doctor drives up this episode and refuses to get into his car. Like, I think there's this side to being a crime boss's daughter who has all these secrets and is in an unhappy marriage where you're like lying to protect yourself, which is, you know, what she's doing when she ends up on the island. But by the end, it sounds like she's just learned that's a skill, and it's like a proactive lying to get what she wants instead of lying to keep herself out of danger.
Yeah, that's true. She's more, maybe she's more of her father's daughter than, you know, we would have first believed or something like that, right?
Yeah, it would. Yeah. She was just as angry as Jin, but just on the inside.
Yeah.
We got some emails?
Yeah. Okay. So we got some emails. Welcome to the storm section. Here come your emails. So the first one is, from Caleb, and he writes in about, the Kate and Claire relationship. And he says, one thing I want to say about maternity leave that you didn't quite cover last week, this is storm material, is showing this buildup of the Kate-Claire relationship as a huge payoff in The Flash Sideways in season 6. Not only does Kate kidnap Claire in her taxi, then end up taking her to the adoptive parents' house, then on the hospital for a pregnancy scare, they actually trigger each other's memories, reveal when Claire gives birth. On my rewatch, I had forgotten that and had been trying to remember how Kate got triggered, so it was a great payoff that it was Aaron's birth and a solidification of Kate and Claire's relationship, which would have extended off-island for the show's finale. So yeah, so just really quickly, I don't know, in case you're listening to the storm but don't remember, but like in the final season, like all of our losties in this Flash Sideways universe, this like waiting room of heaven or non-denominational heaven or whatever, are awoken up by the most important person to them. Like Juliet and Sawyer wake each other up, etc. And, I've always loved, I don't think it's Claire, it's Aaron. I think it's Aaron wakes up both Claire and Kate, and I've always loved that. Ditto, Sun and Jin wake up when they see their child on the ultrasound monitor. So, I've always liked that. Do you guys have anything to say about that?
Yes, I enjoy that. I kind of enjoy, we're in this period where we can see the show experimenting with like the pairings that, you know, are starting to work. And I like that they try Kate with a bunch of different people. And eventually it seems like they land on, you know, Claire and ultimately Aaron as like Kate's big hook for the last season. But, it shows that they were still, you know, they were always kind of doing this where they kind of like throw characters together, see what'll happen for a couple episodes. And that's a good lost thing.
Yeah. It's a good person for Kate. I think we talked about it a little bit last week, how I don't think they decided the whole Kate and Aaron thing for sure until it was Oceanic 6 time. But to Neil's point, it is interesting to me in this time of the show where they are trying so many things and to see what really like sticks right as it shows up. It's like Kate and Claire like working together, like we all enjoyed that happening. So the fact that they keep coming back to it and manage to not faceplant along the way is great.
Caleb also writes, this is the end of season 2 thing, but I probably won't remember to read it then. So I'm going to read it now. Later in this season, we get Desmond's flashback of the boat race. I only just realized this the other day, but as it was Widmore's boat race, was Charles trying to use it as a way to find the island in case any contestants mysteriously disappeared on the route? That had never occurred to me. Is that something that occurred to either of you?
Well, is the race one of those races where they're like totally cut off? So like, I guess how would Widmore use sailors to track where the island is? If it's one of the
little like, tracking devices on
little,
their boats.
Little secret tracking devices.
Beep, 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 beep. Oh, where'd Desmond go? And what a fun coincidence that it's the guy that he wants to get out of his daughter's life. I don't know. I don't think this show ever makes that clear one way or another, but I wouldn't put it past good old Charles to do that.
Yeah, Widmore. He's a real... You gotta watch him. He's a tough one.
Well, also, isn't it also Libby's boat? So it's actually a part of a mystery we never kind of get the full...
Yes.
The Elizabeth.
The full thing of. So it could be that.
The Elizabeth.
Or something like that. Somebody could have sent Desmond to the island. Which makes a lot more sense considering how important he ends up being through retcon. Like this super electromagnetic resistant being. But, yeah.
All right. And then this email comes from Katie, and Katie writes, hello, I've been listening to your show since you started covering Lost, and I've loved it all along the way. I like the format, the hosts, and the long episodes that help me get through my commute. I never thought much about sending an email, but after listening to Maternity Leave, I had to drop you a note. Like you all, I really enjoyed watching Claire and Kate in this episode, particularly as I know how their connection will continue in coming seasons. And I have to say, as a queer woman watching the show, I always thought that in another universe, Kate and Claire would end up together. I would like to back up your lovely guest, Kristen Russo, whom I love from her stint on season one of To Elle and Back podcast, that Kate is indeed a beloved lesbian icon. For me, part of that was not just her toughness, cargo pants, and the handy tree climbing skills, but the way she protects and takes care of Claire. All too often, TV and film put women in competition or no relation to each other whatsoever. Hello, Bechdel test. But in Lost, we get this total badass Kate having a prolonged loyalty and commitment to Claire. I, of course, realize the show is not intending any romantic subtext, but another cultural moment, what might have been different? When I watched the show through the first time, I felt my suspicions of their amorous potential was all but confirmed in the finale when Kate takes one look between Claire's legs when delivering the baby and bam, remembers everything. So maybe it's not the parent that woke Kate up. It isn't her connection to Jack or Sawyer.
I love that one.
It isn't her connection to Jack or Sawyer that sparks this moment for her. It's the intimacy she had with Claire that in another world might have been much more. Thanks for the great show, Katie. Katie also says, jumping ahead a few episodes, when Ana Lucia goes to Australia and drives Christian to what I think is Claire's mother's house, why does a Patsy Cline song play, aka Kate's musical cue? Am I missing a connection there? Is Kate around? So I don't know the answer to that. Patsy Cline is usually an indication that we're in a Kate episode. That is obviously not the case here. There's no reason for Kate to be around there, right?
Yeah, so. I feel like we're gonna have to spend some time digging into this and see if there's a reason.
I have a guess that I'm going to guess from working on a cable TV show for 10 years, which is they have a library of music they've licensed, and whoever is the assistant editor on the thing is throwing in music tracks, and unless the editor decides specifically it needs to be a different type of music, that sort of thing could kind of just carry through and no one would notice unless somebody was thinking, oh, only Patsy Cline and Kate songs. But somewhere on their machine, they have a folder of Patsy Cline songs that they've licensed. So that would be a guess.
According to Lostpedia, Carlton Cusa says that the writers have associated Patsy Cline's music with the character of Kate because actress Evangeline Lilly would often listen to Patsy Cline. They've only used four songs on the show, Leaving on Your Mind, Walking After Midnight, She's Got You, and Three Cigarettes in an Ashtray. And they're all Kate instances except for this one. At Walking After Midnight appears in three episodes, What Kate Did, Left Behind, and Two for the Road. Two for the Road is where it shows up for Claire. Claire/ Ana / Christian. So
it's a reuse song. I'm sticking with it. Okay. Sticking with somebody dragged it from a bin somewhere and was like, this'll work.
It is tougher to believe with a show like Lost, where it's like everything is very specific and on purpose with this show. So then it's harder for me to believe that they like randomly threw that in there. I need a reason, Dave. I need it to have reason.
All right. Well, let me tell you something, a story about Lost, Neil.
It's a TV show.
It's a show that makes you really think you need a reason and then denies that reason to you. Oh, so damn. I hope this is not one of those occasions.
I didn't mean for this to get that deep.
All right, we're going to close out this email segment with an email from my longest time podcast listener email sender in my life, which is Mr. Pat Spinoggle. Pat is famous for his long emails, so bear with me. Pat writes, Dear Island Mysteries, in the last podcast covering maternity leave, you discussed in the storm section the importance of Mr. Friendly referring to a he or him. I support Joanna's assessment that Mr. Friendly was referring via pronoun to Ben Lioness and not necessarily to Jacob. It's debatable what the showrunners/writers actually intended, if they knew that they were talking about some godlike entity or just someone at the top of the other management chain. Even though the showrunners had not cast Michael Emerson as the leader of the Otherton, it seems reasonable there would be a leader, and since Mr. Friendly was using the reference in a kind of wait till your father comes home way, it was established that Friendly was not the top dog. Because the show establishes solidly later on that contact with Jacob was almost exclusively the province of Richard Alpert, someone being warned that they might have to talk to him pretty much rules out Jacob. I think it's worthwhile to have a discussion on the leaders among the others. Even though we often see Ben as the leader, we see other authority figures. In the third season, the wonderful Diana Scarwid plays the quote-unquote sheriff, Isabel, giving Jack and Juliet a hard time. Charles Widmore had once been in charge of the others and concurrent with Ben running things at the old Dharma compound. The very cool Dogen seemed to be in charge at the temple. Don't talk to me about the temple, Pat. I'm not ready to go there.
It's important.
It's Dogen, right? Dogen, not Dogen. Sorry. Okay. It's unclear who might have had authority over the others, as well as what leadership role that the immortal Richard Alpert might have had. Richard was clearly part of the mix during the Widmore years and the Lannis years, as well as during any time that someone before Dogen was calling the shot at the temple. A good question would be, why wasn't Richard in charge? He not only had unequaled access to Jacob, he had tremendous seniority as the original minion of Jacob. My suggestion for Richard relegated to a subordinate position in the other hierarchy would be because Jacob needed to have less capable people in charge of the others, because his endgame relied on the Man in Black successfully gaining influence and being able to manipulate one of the others into killing Jacob. This also hinged on the Man in Black being able to possess a suitable host, a dead candidate who could then be dispatched, provided the island power source to the Man in Black could be interrupted. I think about Jacob and his relationship with the others and their leadership and why he had such a notable hands-off interaction with them, other than providing lists according to Ben's face-to-face complaints with Jacob at the end of season 5. This email might not be super insightful, but since Joanna mentioned that you hadn't gotten email recently, I felt the need to correct that. As you know, I'm fond of all three of you, and I hope you're doing well and thriving. Best regards, Pat. So thank you for that email, Pat. Why?
Aw, thanks, Pat.
Neil Miller. Why wasn't Richard Alpert the leader of
Isn't there something, as you were reading that, I was furiously thinking about Richard Alpert for the first time in a long time. Isn't there something else? There's something special about Richard where he's not allowed to do that, right? Like, his role is very specific, and he's not allowed to take over. Isn't that the whole thing where he's not allowed to take over at the end? Nope. I'm misremembering, maybe.
He's like the intermediary, but not.
Right. He's just like a vessel that can do stuff, but he can't be like the guardian of the island, and he can't take over for Jacob or anything that any of the like islandy mystery things that need to happen. For some reason, there's a rule where it's like, it can't be Richard.
He can also leave the island, and the leaders can't leave the island.
Right. The Man in Black and Jacob can't leave the island.
Well, but like,
I'm going to say because like, Jacob can't appoint a leader, and Jacob appoints Richard. I think appointing a leader would be like putting his hand on the scale, because ultimately his goal is to like let people test themselves to find a replacement. And sort of like the argument he's having with his brother is, are humans like inherently evil or not? So I think it'd be weird if there was like a Jacob forward society that was actually like led by somebody who met him and knew him and interacted with him.
But doesn't he kind of pick the, like, doesn't he pick Ben, they think, as the leader? Isn't that the thing?
I guess, I mean, a lot of the stuff that's done in Jacob's name is sort of like unclear who is doing it.
Yeah.
So you're right, but that's what makes me feel better in my headcanon is like, you know, it's like, you know, the Christian God wouldn't be like, Jesus is your president now. Like, right. He'd want us to make that choice ourselves.
Or the, like, Richard is more like the Metatron, right? But like, what's weird about Richard is like, he sometimes calls the shots, right? Like, sometimes.
Well, sometimes he's like the interim guy. It seems. Yeah, like, he's interim in charge sometimes.
I think he might like be unaware until the final season that he is still being tested just by virtue of being on the island.
And is Jacob saying, is Pat's email saying that Jacob's endgame was to anticipate what the Man in Black would do? Like the Man in Black manipulating Ben into killing him, like manipulating John and then manipulating Ben into killing him and all that sort of stuff. That Jacob like foresaw that, and that was all part of Jacob's plan to get Jack and then Hurley, I guess, into his position?
I mean, maybe because, well, he knows the man in black's looking for a loophole, and presumably he knows what that loophole is, because when Ben shows up, he's like, you know, I see you, or when he shows up with Ben, he's like, I see you finally found your loophole. So that does show some sort of pre-knowledge of how things are going to play out. I guess the question would be, like, how much pre-knowledge?
Yeah.
Oh, the Jacob mysteries. Man, season 6 is going to be real fun, guys.
Yeah, I'm in season 5 right now, and it's really fun. I mean, I need to look at it, but I want to know when they figured out they wanted to make Richard immortal. I guess the first time we know that Richard is immortal is when he's the same age in the Ben flashback, right?
I think so. Is that where he shows up, or does he show up in Jughead?
He shows Jughead up in the Ben 1950s, right. For sure.
Okay, so yeah, Ben flashback.
Yeah, the first Ben flashback, where he like gasses everyone, is like Richard. And then Richard's immortality. Like, I wonder if at that point they knew what they were going to do with season 5. And knowing what they're going to do with season 5, it was really important to have a character who was consistently there throughout all of it. Cause like, there's just so many times when the time traveling Losties walk into the other camp and be like, I demand to speak with Richard Albert. It happens like so many times. It's always great because Nestor Carbonell is great as well. But, I don't know. That's just like, it's an interesting thing that they decided to do. And I'm not convinced it was always the plan for Richard. I guess we could dig into that more. If you have any thoughts, you can email us, host@stormpodcast.com. We would love to hear your Richard Albert thoughts, your Jacob Endgame thoughts, your, Kate and Claire MFEO thoughts. What did wake Kate up? Was it Aaron? Was it Claire? Was it something else? Let us know your thoughts. Those are our storm emails this week.
Was it something else, meaning just one part of Claire?
You didn't have to put a fine point on it. I think I got there.
No, jokes are always more funny when you explain them right afterwards.
What my reaction presupposes is maybe they aren't.
Excellent. Neil, where are we going next week?
Ooh, that's an excellent question. We are going into
Nico.
Lockdown. Yeah, Nico, who apparently is just really enjoying her life as the fourth co-host this week. We're going into lockdown.
And lockdown.
Guess which character is the flashback for an episode called Lockdown?
Say
down.
Wait, what? It's John Locke. It's, you guys get it.
Saeed? No?
Okay. Nope.
excellent. Horse? So we will, horse, we will see you next week for lockdown. Until then, where can people find more of your work around the internet? Let's start this week with Joanna Robinson.
Pals, it's Westworld time. Are you so excited? You can hear me talk about the TV show Westworld over on the Decoding Westworld podcast with Dave Chen, or you can hear me talk about it over on the Vanity Fair podcast Still Watching with Richard Lawson. So many places to hear me talk about Westworld. You can follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This.
And Mr. Neil Miller.
Well, you know, you can always get me over at thefilmschoolrejects.com or on Twitter at rejects or, at One Perfect Shot, I believe is another place. But don't forget to follow our Twitter at Storm Podcast, which is where you will get all of the best polls and Lost memes.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. You can also find me on the Fighting in the War Room podcast, where we're starting to try to pick up some pieces of South by Southwest by pointing you in direction of coverages or things you could watch or where you could watch things that didn't premiere at the canceled South by Southwest. The film community needs to come together to support each other in this moment of coronavirus crisis, and especially the Austin Strong film community is up to the task. So check that out if you want to, Fighting in the War Room, wherever great podcasts can be found. And I will see you next week, where I hope in between here and there you have not fallen down.